and there is also a self-paced lighting scale. Kevin Elliott or his staff can be reached at 398-9066 or ELLIOTTCounselinggroup.com.
This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with Marlon Livingston, director of Cunningham Children's Home in Urbana. But first, disability news for the week of October 14th, 2019. According to federal officials, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development said it's making $75 million available to fund the development of new housing for people with disabilities. HUD said that nonprofits will be able to apply for funds to create, quote, innovative, permanent, supportive housing models that will be at the forefront of design, service delivery, and efficient use of federal resources, end quote. Groups that wish to be awarded the housing grants are being encouraged to partner with agencies or organizations that provide services and supports to help individuals live independently in the community. Said Brian Montgomery, Federal Housing Commissioner, quote, "We're seeking to fund innovative and efficient housing models that combine form and function, a pleasant and safe place to live with the appropriate supportive services. Our goal is to support affordable housing developments that allow persons with disabilities to live as independently as possible in their own communities," end quote. In addition, the Department of Housing and Urban Development also said that $37 million is now available in rental assistance for people with disabilities. Housing agencies that are working with state health and human services or Medicaid programs can apply for the funds. Officials say that this is the first time in 9 years that both programs supporting rental assistance and the development of new homes are being funded simultaneously. Ben Carson, Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, said, quote, "Very simply, we need more permanent supportive housing to assist persons living with disabilities. The funding we offer today will support existing developments and for the first time in nearly a decade, help to produce new affordable housing at a time we need it the most," end quote. People with disabilities who receive Social Security or Supplemental Security Income benefits will be getting more money next year. The Social Security Administration said Thursday that benefits will rise 1.6% for 2020. The increase is due to an automatic cost of living adjustment, or COLA, that's mandated by law and is tied to inflation. It's triggered when the Consumer Price Index from the U.S. Department of Labor's Bureau of Labor Statistics goes up. The change will take effect beginning December 31st for over 8 million SSI beneficiaries across the country, and in January 2020 for more than 63 million Americans receiving Social Security. With the increase, the maximum federal SSI payment for an individual will go from $771 per month to $783 per month for 2020. For couples, the federal maximum will rise from $1,157 to $1,175 per month. Some states offer additional money to SSI beneficiaries, so actual payments may be higher. Though beneficiaries will see bigger payments in 2020, the COLA for the coming year is down substantially from last year's adjustment, which was 2.8% compared to the year prior. Pharmaceutical company Johnson & Johnson must pay $8 billion in punitive damages to a man who claimed the company failed to warn that boys using its antipsychotic drug Risperdal could grow breasts, a Philadelphia jury said last week. The Philadelphia Common Pleas court jury agreed that Janssen Pharmaceuticals, a Johnson & Johnson subsidiary, engaged in a pervasive nationwide effort to illegally market Risperdal and down downplay its very serious risks on a systemic level. The case was brought by Nicholas Murray, a Maryland resident who developed female breast tissue after taking Risperdal, according to court records. In 2015, Murray had won $680,000 in compensatory damages over his claim. Last week's verdict came in the first Risperdal trial in which a jury assessed whether to award punitive damages and how much. According to the Philadelphia law firm Klein and Spector, one of the firms that represented Murray, thousands of Risperdal cases remain pending in the Philadelphia court system. Johnson & Johnson called the $8 billion award a clear violation of due process and said it would immediately appeal the verdict. The company said it was confident the award would be overturned, calling it grossly disproportionate with the initial compensatory award. For Johnson & Johnson, the latest legal setback comes at a time when the company is already battling hefty verdicts and settlements in cases over the nation's opioid crisis, vaginal mesh implants that allegedly injured women, and baby powder allegedly tainted with asbestos. Professor Carl Tobias of the University of Richmond School of Law told Reuters that he expects the punitive damages to be lowered on appeal, but said the verdict could be a sign that Johnson & Johnson will face more large damages awards in other Risperdal cases. Risperdal was originally approved for schizophrenia and bipolar disorder, but Johnson & Johnson worked aggressively to expand its use, making Risperdal a $3 billion a year drug by targeting seniors with dementia and children with behavioral disorders and autism. Critics said many of those uses were not warranted. Johnson & Johnson said the drug's label clearly and appropriately outlined the risks associated with the medicine. This decision is inconsistent with multiple determinations outside of Philadelphia regarding the adequacy of the Risperdal labeling, the medicine's efficacy, and findings in support of the company. End quote. Johnson & Johnson had $15.3 billion in net earnings in 2018. And finally, officials at a private facility in Harvey, Illinois, that houses and educates children with severe disabilities will soon be forced to choose between laying off staff or discontinuing education to 11 students if they can't find a district willing to enroll them, according to a lawsuit filed late last month. The Children's Habilitation Center, which provides education and other services to students with intellectual disabilities, orthopedic impairments, traumatic brain injuries, and other severe mental and physical limitations, claims several Illinois school districts have refused to enroll their students in violation of state and federal law. The suit says, quote, "This case is about how several Illinois school districts have put their desire to save money over their legal obligation to provide a free and appropriate public education to 11 severely disabled and medically fragile children who live and go to school at Children's Habilitation Center. Despite every party acknowledging that the children are entitled to a free and appropriate education under the law and that some Illinois school districts must enroll them, each school district is passing the buck and the children remain without a home district and without the legally required public funding for their schooling," end quote. The suit filed in Cook County Circuit Court requested that the superintendent of the Illinois State Board of Education make a district determination for the 11 students and demands more than $622,000 in a judgment against the named defendants, which include ISBE, West Harvey Dixmoor School District 147, West Aurora School District 129, Burbank School District 111, Iroquois County School District No. 9 in Watsika, and Frankfort School District 157C, and Chicago Public Schools. And that's the news for this week. You are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. I'm Vicki Nicewander. This is Disability Beat, and I'm joined today in the studio by Marlon Livingston, who is the director of Cunningham Children's Home right here in Urbana. Welcome to the program, Marlon.
Thank you for having me, Vicki.
We had a nice long conversation before the show ever started. I just hope we can fit all this great information into the program. So why don't you kind of introduce yourself first, and then we'll just dive right into Cunningham Children's Home.
Well, I'm a hometown guy. I grew up in Charleston, got my graduate degree at U of I, and then actually started my career at Cunningham 20 more years than I'd like to admit, 20 some years ago as a child therapist. So now I'm back, and I have one son with an intellectual disability. We adopted from we were foster parents for, I think, 8 years or so. Mm-hmm. I had a number of kids come through, but my son Kevin was, I think, meant to be with us. I think on most days he would agree.
Maybe not all days, but yeah. So,
and he's great. He lives independently now in the community, works mm-hmm. in Carl Food Service. And so, it's a great community with lots of resources. Nothing's perfect, but we're just very blessed to be able to raise a family in this community. So, yeah, I've been back at Cunningham now for about 11 years. Coming up, 11 years.
Back at Cunningham. You mean you left for a while?
Oh, yeah. I started at Cunningham 20-some years ago, and then I worked at the Pavilion. I actually worked with Kevin Elliott. Was odd that we started our careers together in Charleston working in rehab. We both ended up back at the Pavilion, mm-hmm. And we both worked there. He ran the acute unit, and I did the RTC. I've worked at the Lincoln's Challenge program. I was one of the first staff hired there. More recently, back from Miami, Florida. Mm-hmm. I had 13 offices all over Florida, about 3,000 foster care, intact, and adoption cases. And we came back because we really wanted to raise, well, first of all, I love Cunningham. It's where I started my career. So I was very jaded and biased. And then my mother and my wife colluded. And before I knew it, I had a resume prepared. And after Sam Banks announced his retirement. And so I've been back now as CEO for about 11 years.
Wow. So what all do people, I mean, there are a lot of people I know who have driven past the pretty property over there in Cunningham and wondered what was back there, or maybe, you know, knew what was there, but didn't really know anything about it. What do people need to know about Cunningham?
Well, we still get that a lot. People drive by and say, well, I thought it was a park, because our facility staff do a great job of maintaining the grounds. And we're about 37 acres, and not a lot of the campus is visible from the street. And mm-hmm. so if you do want to look at our campus, we do open up. We obviously are very sensitive to confidentiality, but we give regular tours for the public if you ever want to come out and see our 37-acre campus. And so we just completed a $23 million capital campaign that started about 10 years ago, our last building, the Knoll Education Center. And so we have a number of youth that continue to live on our campus, about 56 youth. And we were founded as an orphanage, like many of the children's homes were. But today we've evolved into one of our core services is residential treatment for severely emotionally disturbed children.
Right. So you don't serve as an orphanage anymore.
We don't. Most of the youth that really were served, through the orphanage movement are now in foster care. So that's the first choice. We're actually one of the last placements that serve some of the most acute children in the state of Illinois. And so foster care system, with the advent of foster care in the 40s, 50s, late 50s, we began serving at-risk youth. Mm-hmm. Which they were challenged. But now, more recently, and this has evolved over mainly in the last 15 years, we serve a very psychiatric population. You know, a lot of state-operated mental health facilities have closed or were closed, and so we serve a lot of those populations that were previously served by the state-operated facilities. So our kids are very acute.
Mm-hmm. And are most of the kids that are served at Cunningham from this local area, or do they come from all over?
They mostly come, all of them come from Illinois. Mm-hmm. Most of them come from central Illinois. So we're what we call the central region. So think Rockford, draw a line, Rockford, Joliet, over to Quincy, over to Danville, down to like Effingham.
That's a pretty big region.
It is. It's a fairly large region.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the services that you provide to the kids that are served there.
Sure. In our residential program, anyone listening to the show or who is involved in the field know that trauma-informed care is very important to our work right now. It's cutting-edge science, and we work with kids that, if I can, I won't go into all the clinical syndromes, but our kids have been in multiple placements. They've been come from very traumatized backgrounds, and they are usually very angry, very suicidal, a lot of self-harming behaviors. And our staff of over 300 folks work with the youth, and as part of the healing, we have a number of services that provide them. So we have master level therapists, of course, but we also have some really cool things that I think that we're that really benefit our kids that maybe a lot of facilities are not able to resource, and that is our special therapies department. So we have recreation therapy, art therapy, music therapy. We have a chaplain on staff that's appointed by the Methodist Church, and so which we think spirituality, no matter what your faith walk is or where you're at in your faith walk, we believe that spirituality can play an important role in the healing process. And so as good as a therapist as I'd like to maybe acknowledge that I was, and maybe there's some kids that might disagree, a lot of times kids that are, you know, if you have an angry teenager, talk therapy over a desk is sometimes very difficult to reach our youth. So we have all these adjunct therapies that kind of help our kids open up and participate in sports and explore poetry and learn how to play the drums. And we have all these things we have swim lessons. So all of the kids, last year was the first time in many years that I think every one of our kids knew how to swim. And we take kids over to Crystal Lake and go fishing, and we grill out. I mean, it's just it's not home. And I think in residential care, our kids are with us about 18 months now, those that live with us. And I was part of the group probably 20 or 30 years ago that thought, well, just growing up in residential is okay. And our thinking has really evolved. Growing up in residential is not okay. And so our average length of stay now is around 18 months. And our kids either transition to one of our other programs out in the community as young adults or return to typically therapeutic or some kind of specialized foster care. So residential is one of the components that we serve. But we have a variety of other programs.
Right. Well, let's talk about some of those because I think people probably aren't aware of what there is.
Sure. Well, obviously we have kids that age out of foster care. When we say age out of foster care, that's really kind of a nice word for really youth who transition into adulthood without a family. Mm-hmm. And that's very, very tough. Now, I was probably ready to live completely independently and literally knew everything at the age of 16. But I'm just joking.
Oh, that. I was going to say, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, no. But most of the kids need ongoing support up until young adulthood. And we're fortunate to have a number of transitional programs. And those look, we have houses that we have a staff there on shift 24 hours a day. We have a couple of transitional houses. And we also have opportunities for kids to live independently. They may live with a Parkland student. We have a kid right now going to U of I. And kind of where they're at and what they need is where they live. So transitional services, we've always been proud to offer that as part of our continuum up until the age of 21. I guess what we're very excited, we just opened the Knoll Education Center and also the Mary and Lou Henson Gymnasium, big supporters. We named the floor after Kendall Gill. We just opened that facility in January and February of this year. Mm-hmm. We have two school programs. One school program, as you might guess, serves our residential youth.
Sure.
The other program has about, I think, 70 youth right now from the surrounding community. These are youth that have not been successful in public school. Mm-hmm. And they have an IEP, they've been in self-contained, they've had one-on-one aids, but they need more. And we serve that niche. Most are from Champaign-Urbana, but we have a child that comes from Charleston. We've had kids that come from Rantoul, Mahomet, and the surrounding communities.
And this is just a day school. It's
therapeutic, right? Therapeutic day school. They're with us from the morning. The school districts transport them, are responsible for the transportation. Some they ride in cabs, buses, and everything in between. Mm-hmm. And these are youth that just haven't been successful in the public school system. Severe autism, and some kids are nonverbal. all different IQs, and so it's been a very successful program. We opened up, we had about 50, on average we usually had about 55 or 60 kids in our history, but we're already full now with a new school opening up. So it's been a fantastic success, and we're just glad to be. Not a lot of agencies have a school like Cunningham or Circle Academy, and what happens to those families when we don't have this resource in the community? That if a child is living at home and they have these special education needs that cannot be met by the community, they often have to go to a residential facility to live. And so we're very fortunate to have that asset in the community.
Yeah, so Circle Academy, I've heard of before. I didn't realize it was a part of Cunningham.
It is.
Is the Ready program, that's another one that's local
the
here.
The Ready program is a little bit different of a program. The Ready program primarily focuses on children that have been expelled from school or have extended supervision. It's more of maybe a school delinquency program to where they've been expelled from school. Now, certainly some of those youth have IEPs as well, but I think that's a little bit more shorter term of a program maybe. Mm-hmm. Our youth have more severe emotional disturbances and not necessarily issues of conduct. Now, I think on a day-to-day basis, sometimes those clinical profiles kind of look the same. So certainly kids at Ready, as well as kids at Cunningham, if, you know, might act out, be aggressive, et cetera. If you look deeper into the clinical profile, our kids have more psychiatric, have more of a psychiatric bent to their clinical profile. So we work in tandem with that. So again, back to my earlier statement, this community, and I've lived other places, this community has an abundance of resources. And I know for a lot of parents, sometimes it doesn't feel like that, but we are pretty blessed to have kind of a broad continuum of services for the community.
Yeah, I've actually met some folks from Danville when doing the Disability Resource Expo last year, and they said, you guys don't know how lucky you are in Champaign-Urbana because there's nothing even close
In
Danville.
What a segue. Unplanned, listeners. But we did open up a therapeutic day school in Rossville. Vermilion obviously was familiar with Circle.
Mm-hmm.
Vermilion representatives in the school district. And I think at one time they had tried to bus kids to Champaign County. I think this is during my hiatus from Cunningham, but that just didn't work out. Obviously, it's quite the drive from Danville and certainly around Route 1. You're talking about Georgetown, et cetera. So we opened up a therapeutic day school in Rossville.
Mm-hmm.
It's been open now for 3 years. So that serves Vermilion County, mainly Danville, but also Georgetown and Ridge Farm, some of the other smaller communities, Hoopston. So that we're really excited to offer that service as well.
So you're in serving youth with disabilities, with, you know, emotional and behavioral disorders. Do you also support folks in the area of employment?
We do. We have a number of programs. Again, it's going to be hard to get it all in. So
I know.
In 2015, we looked at our strategic plan, we met with the board, and we heard from the community. And really what we heard was Cunningham has almost 300 talented staff doing a lot of great work on our 37-acre campus. Well, I think at that time we had about 240 staff. And there was a big push for us to consider how could we have a bigger impact on the community. And in 2015, we adopted a new strategic plan, and we moved out. We got off our campus, which was a little nerve-wracking for us because we felt it was very comfortable to be on our campus.
Mm-hmm.
And we moved out, and so we do have a vocational program now through the WIOA grant,
mm-hmm.
The DRS Vocational Options Program. And so those services are available not to young adults and even older adults. It's one of the few programs where we serve older adults, 30, 40-year-old adults, for vocational services. It's through our ECHO program, and it's a great program, and we were very successful with it. We have, I think, relationships with about 30 businesses
mm-hmm.
in Champaign County where we do placements, and so we're very excited about that program as well. So we do offer vocational services. And our residential kids also get vocational services. So when you leave Cunningham, you have to be able to cook as a young adult. You have to be able to cook, do chores, work, and do your laundry. And so we used to just do chores, and we put kids out in the community for the folks that live there, and they would get fired pretty quickly. And we knew we had to do something in-house. So for many of our youth, they work on our campus, recycling, things of that nature. They get hired. They sometimes do get fired. They do have to interview. And we work on those job skills before we place them out in the community. But the vocational options program, that's open to the broader community. So it's not, you don't have to be a Cunningham youth to participate in that program.
Well, one thing that surprised me when we were talking earlier was that you also serve individuals who are over the age of 22. How exactly does that work?
Yeah, we have programs that serve, in addition to our vocational programs that I just spoke of, Hope Springs is another program that we opened up. It's an outpatient behavioral health center, a counseling center. It's located on Devonshire Drive. Mm-hmm. If you got a little bit of gray hair like I have, you remember the old Hideaway restaurant over on Devonshire. It's in that space there. We take all commercial insurance. We serve adults as well as children and youth. But I'll tell you that our sweet spot and what we're really good at, we believe, is children, adolescents and young adults and their families. That program's been open about 3 years now. We take all commercial insurance. Like if you name the commercial insurance, we take that commercial insurance. But we're one of the few places in towns where we take Medicaid or one of the Medicaid managed care insurance programs. So, and we have sliding fails. We won't turn anybody away. Mm-hmm. And we thought, as I was talking to you before the show, we thought we were going to have to do some advertising, and we haven't had to spend a dollar on advertising. So we've gotten a pretty strong reputation as a program that works really well with children and youth.
Yeah, great. So we're almost out of time, but I do want to, I know it went by fast, didn't it? It always does. Yeah, I just wanted to give you a chance to share with you, with the listeners, maybe how they might learn more about Cunningham Children's Home.
Well, everything is on our website these days, and that's true for Cunningham as well. So you can visit cunninghamhome.org, and you can get links to our Hope Springs Counseling Center, to our Circle Academy in Rossville. So everything that I spoke about on this program, all of our, if you go to the programs tab, everything is there. And we're just very proud to be part of this great community.
So. And if folks want to come and take a tour, how do they do that?
Just call our main number, 217-367-3728, 217-367-3728. And just say, I would like to come out for a tour. We have volunteer opportunities. Christmas is coming up. We have wrapping where you can come and wrap kids, help kids wrap presents. Mm-hmm. They shop for family members, so we think that's a really cool thing. It's sometimes the first time that youth have had the opportunity to shop for a family member. And sometimes it's an aunt, a former foster parent, a grandparent. And we have shoppers come in to our campus, help them wrap, select and wrap those presents. And so holidays are a very busy time at Cunningham.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Marlon Livingston of Cunningham Children's Home. It was great having this conversation.
Thank you so much. No, I stand my ground. Won't be turned around. And I'll keep this world from dragging me down. Gonna stand my ground. And I won't back down. Pushing me around, but I'll stand my ground, and I won't back down. Hey, baby, there ain't no easy way out. Hey, I
understand.